They are a human's best friends, but when it comes to feeding them, the options are endless and it can get really confusing. We have chosen to feed our dog a raw diet. Here is why.
Welcome to the Homesteading Roller Coaster. My name is Ilaria, and in this podcast, I share my family's adventures on Tatum Hills Farm, our property on Ngunnawal Country, just outside of Canberra, Australia. We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders, past, present and emerging. In this podcast, we discuss anything to do with farm life, homesteading, sustainable living, growing your own and much more. So let's get started.
This is the kind of episode that we have to start with a disclaimer. I am not a dog expert and much less a dog's nutritional expert. I've only had two dogs that were actually mine in my entire life, and so I am really not super experienced. But I have done a lot of research and I'm really passionate about this topic, so I thought I'd just share what I've learned and what works for me in the hope that it will spark somebody's interest and then you can go and do your own research and make your own decisions. There. So that's the disclaimer out of the way. Now our story. We adopted our first dog, Miley, 9 years ago now. She was already 5 years old and she was only with us for 4 years. She died at the age of nine. She was a purebred rough collie, so a lassie dog, and she was completely riddled with every sort of health issue you can imagine. She had a genetic blindness and she had all sorts of allergies and tummy issues, and she was just a lot of work to take care of from a health point of view. She was the sweetest, gentlest, best dog ever. And we loved her so much and we did our best, but it was just so hard. And when she died, we had a break and then decided to not get a rescue this time, which was quite a soul-searching moment for us. But I just needed a dog that worked and wasn't completely riddled with issues from day one, because I didn't feel like we were experienced enough to deal with that. So Kip came into our lives 3 years ago. He is a joy and really annoying and super energetic. He is a cavoodle, or you might call him a cavapoo. So one of those, I think they call them designer breeds, which are really a cross, which is why I was attracted to it, because I think purebreds tend to get inbred and have more issues. So these guys are kind of a breed, but they really originate from a cross between a poodle and the Cavalier King's Charles. The other thing that attracted me to this breed was that he's fairly small, but not super tiny. So he can stand his own on the farm, but it's also not too big and the kids can play with him easily. And it's just the right size for our family. When he came into our lives, we had a seven-year-old and a one-year-old humans. So we needed him to be sturdy enough to be playing with the kids, but also not so big that it would flatten them when it got to full size. So he's worked really well for us. Between when Miley died and when we got Kip, we had about a year to 18 months of break to recover from, you know, the mourning of losing a pet, and also to kind of regroup and think how we would do things differently. And I started to do a lot of research into nutrition, because that was one of the issues that Miley had. And I stumbled across the raw feeding community. I had heard of it before, but it kind of sounded a bit like a sect or something that, you know, a bit too out there. And at that point, I was still roughly in a space where I believed vets and I thought they were the all-knowing, good animal people and that you should follow their advice. And I certainly had done that with cats. I've had cats my entire life and I spent a lot of money in all these prescription diets that the vets prescribe for various issues with cats. I'm sure they do that with dogs as well. And they're all biscuits that they prescribe, so dried food. And I've had a lot of cats with kidney problems, and mostly they get to a certain age and then they get kidney problems. And then I've had a lot of teeth problems in my cats and so on. And as I started researching raw feeding of the dogs, of course, being two carnivores that are common pets, there's a lot of information about both. And things started to really click for me, and I started to have a bit of an aha moment. And that was that, you know, I started to read information about how these animals are designed to eat moist food. You know, they'll eat a mouse, they'll eat a rabbit, they'll eat, I don't know, a cow if they're a really big dog. And that's moist. And we are forcing them to eat a dry diet. And yes, we're giving them water, but it's not quite the same thing. Imagine if you were just surviving on crackers, even the most nutritionally balanced crackers, you would probably be craving something a bit moister. And so even though we're giving them a lot of water, their system is sort of put under strain, especially their kidneys, from all this extra salt and dry food that they're receiving. So that started to really resonate with me, because like I said, I had a number of cats who had issues with kidney disease in later in life. And we always put it down to old age, and that's just what happens. And sure, that can also be the case. If you live longer, you've got more chances of getting ill. But at the same time, it was kind of interesting how they all had this particular issue. And I also knew a lot of friends who had cats with similar issues. So that was interesting. The other thing that I've always been told by vets was that you have to give them biscuits because that cleans their teeth. And there's also special biscuits, both for dogs and cats, that clean their teeth, supposedly. And yet, all of my cats would end up with teeth issues at the end of their lives, and that would involve very costly and very invasive procedures by the vets to remove these teeth and clean their mouths and general anesthetics and all of this stuff. At the same time, because we live on a farm, we have a lot of animals, and we were visiting the vet a lot. And sadly, I started to completely lose confidence in the fact that the majority of vets are actually the animal lovers that I thought they were. And this is totally a personal experience. I'm sure there are heaps of fantastic vets out there, and I've been lucky enough to come across a couple. But the majority of your run-of-the-mill vet that I have found seem to be, at least in my experience, more interested in their bottom line than in helping your animal. Or perhaps they're not doing that consciously, they're just doing that because they don't know any better, because they are taught this kind of information at vet school. And with a bit more research, it turns out a lot of pet food companies who produce a lot of dry food and so on, they actually sponsor some of the vet schools. And so the vets are kind of indoctrinated about dry foods and their benefits, so that then they recommend them to their clients and the company sells more. Again, I'm not saying this is a blanket rule, but this can happen. And in any case, I've come to become a little bit skeptical of vets in general. I kind of think a practitioner who stands to make a profit by advising a procedure may not have only your pet's health in mind when they're advising a more expensive, more involved procedure. So this is not to say that you shouldn't believe them. I'm just saying do your own research and ask a lot of questions. And then in collaboration with your vet, you can make a decision. But don't just go blindly with what they suggest. And as I researched more and I made the decision to feed puppy Kip on a raw diet, I actually questioned my vet at the time. I went to her and I said, look, I'm planning to feed, she had seen Miley, so she knew the issue we'd gone through. And I said, look, I'm planning to feed Kip on a raw diet. What do you suggest? What are your recommendations? I said, you know, I have done a bit of research, but I'm not a great expert. Obviously, my prime concern is to have a healthy puppy. What are your recommendations? And immediately she said, well, you know, you should really reconsider. And I knew she would say that. You should really reconsider. There are a lot of studies that dogs that have a raw diet, they have more bacteria in their mouth, and therefore, you know, if they bite your kids, they can give them a worse infection and so on. And as she was saying that, she looked at my face and she kind of knew that that was just a hopeless argument. And I said to her, you know, we live on a farm, there's a lot of bacteria where we are, you know, he shouldn't be biting in the first place. And secondly, there is just, you know, more bacteria, just stronger immune systems for my kids. I'm not concerned about that. And really, I would also question that type of research that has ascertained this, because if you have a diet that cleans your teeth more, chances are you have less bacteria in your mouth. And also, regardless of the diet a dog has, as we know, dogs love to dig disgusting things out of the ground, and half-dead rabbits, and in our case, kangaroo bits half decomposed and whatnot. So, you know, that's what dogs do. So they put that kind of stuff in their mouth. So I think once those kind of bacteria have got in there, it doesn't really matter what you're feeding them. They just got horrible things in their mouth anyway. So if anything, if you're giving them something like a raw bone that can clean their mouth a little bit, you're only doing them and yourself a favor. So that discussion went out the window with the vet pretty quickly. So at that point, I asked her, you know, what are your recommendations? And very quickly became apparent she basically did not know anything about feeding, and she had no idea and had no advice to give me. So I said to her, how about I send you some information, you review it, and then you can give me an advice as to whether you think this is going to be suitable and whether I should make any adjustments to this proposed diet, so that he receives all the nutrition, especially while he's a puppy, to grow nice and healthy. And she agreed, so I emailed her that night with a whole heap of information, some scientific papers and some other papers that I have found from various sources. She reviewed it and she just basically said, yeah, that's fine, that looks like a good diet, off you go. So Kip is only three, so we don't really have a very long personal study. You know, he's fine at the moment, he's in perfect health, but you know, he's also younger, so we'll see how it goes later down the track. So if I got your interest, here is some more information about how you should feed raw and what kind of method we've settled on for ourselves. Depending on the source that you're looking at, the percentages of what amounts of what type of food you should feed will change. But roughly, a good rule of thumb is that you should be feeding 80% meat, 10% bone, and 10% offal. Now, that often switches to something more like 50% meaty bones, and then the rest meat and offal. And that's because, you know, it's hard to find a bone that is just the bone. So, you know, this is not rocket science. You don't have to be super precise. Imagine your own diet. You know roughly that you should eat, you know, a lot of protein, a lot of veggies, a lot of fruit, but you don't sit there and measure everything. You kind of keep a vaguely in the back of your mind and you try to give yourself a reasonably balanced diet over time. You know, not every single meal has to be perfectly balanced. So this is similar. So the meat is exactly what it sounds like. It's meat. And remember, when I say raw diet, I mean raw diet. I don't mean cooking for dogs. That's a whole other story. And personally, I think that's still much better than feeding them dry food, which incidentally is made with the worst of the worst of the leftovers of the abattoir kind of industry. So it's really the worst ever pieces of animal. Then they've been dried up and covered in flavors so the animals will, the dogs will eat them and then present it to you. So cooking for dogs is certainly a much preferable option, but that's not what we're talking about here. Here we're talking about actually getting raw meat and bones to your animals. So one concern actually about giving raw meat is whether they can get sick from it. Now, think about it. They are designed to eat this stuff. You know, look in their mouths. They have carnivore teeth. And if you're thinking about a cat, they're even more of a carnivore. So their whole system is designed to be dealing with meat. So their stomachs are much more acidic than ours to kill the bacteria as quickly as possible. And their digestive tract is much shorter than ours because, although very nutritious, meat, if it sits there and ferments, it can actually become, as we know, very dangerous. So their system is designed to kill as much bacteria from their food as possible quickly, straight out in the stomach, and then pass the food through the system as quickly as possible, absorb all the nutrition and get rid of the stuff so that it doesn't linger there. And that's kind of the opposite of, for example, what our gut is like. Our intestine is 5 meters long because we evolved to eat a varied diet, but especially a lot of plant matter. And so we need a long digestive tract for all of that plant matter to go through our system and be slowly absorbed, because plant cells are a lot harder to break down than animal cells. So that's why we've got a long gut, and that's why the carnivores have a much shorter gut. Meat is not something you want to hang on to for very long. So don't worry about that. They are designed to deal with meat. You give them the meat, and then you've got to sort of design a bit of a diet. So you've got to think about different animals will give them, so different prey animals will give your dogs a more varied diet. So you don't just want to feed them chicken because it's cheap, or you don't just want to feed them beef because it's the thing that you find easily. You want to really try and branch out. And for me at the beginning, that was the hardest thing, to try and find a variety of different animals. So we have a lot of feral rabbits here. And for a while, I found a guy that was going around legally shooting some wild rabbits. For me, sustainability is a big thing as well. I personally don't eat meat. I do eat fish, but I don't eat meat because I've got an issue with the way the meat industry is run. So while I recognize that Kip, my dog, is a carnivore and he needs to eat meat, was hoping to find a way of not necessarily supporting the meat industry with my purchases of his food. So for a while, when I found a guy who was providing me with wild rabbits, luckily all skinned and dealt with because I wouldn't have had the guts to do anything to them, I thought that was a good situation. So for a while, one of the things that Kip had in his diet were these rabbits. Unfortunately, that source has now dried up, so never mind. He's also very fussy, so he wasn't all that keen on the rabbits. But between him and the cats, no rabbit ever went to waste. We also have 5 cats, by the way. So meat from a variety of sources. So if you got nothing else, I mean, most supermarkets will have, or butchers will have at least, you know, beef, pork, and chicken, maybe some duck, and they will also have some lamb here in Australia. That's commonly available. So I try to rotate or mix and match these kind of animals. Of course, price is a concern. Some meats are more expensive than others, but the trick is you don't want to give your dog prime cuts. So you can buy this peripheral stuff, and that also for me fulfills another need or another wish, which is to help the industry use the whole animal, so provide a market for those other bits that would otherwise go to waste, such as the offal or the chicken necks or whatnot, and at the same time not necessarily pour money into the primary products of the industry, because it's an industry that I disagree with. So that has worked for me. I mean, chicken necks are the easiest thing. They're super cheap, really available. Both the small dogs and puppies can have them, and so can the cats. So that's really the go-to and the base of everything. It has to be said that chicken necks, even though they look like meaty bones, and I certainly do feed them as a meaty bone, they are not technically a bone. They're made of cartilage, but I don't think we need to get too technical or too specific. So he gets those. He also gets some chicken wings, but mostly his chicken portion is chicken carcasses. So these are just the frames of the chickens. After all the meat has been removed for human consumption, there's just basically a frame with a little bit of meat on top. And that is a really good option. The bones of the chicken are not too hard, so they're very easy for my small size dog to handle. The cats handle them fine as well, so that's an indication that even a smaller dog than mine would probably be fine. And it's very cheap. It's a product, a byproduct basically of the human meat industry. I mean, of the meat industry for humans. That didn't sound so good. So it ticks all the boxes for me. So he gets a lot of chicken frames and he likes them because he's also pretty fussy. So he loves chicken necks and he loves chicken frames. So those are really constant features in his diet. The other things that I try to give him are other types of bones. And I try to make sure they're not too fat and also they're not too big. And this is another concern with feeding bones to dogs. People, especially the vets, will tell you that it's dangerous because they can split their teeth. Apparently, their jaw strength of a dog is very high. Obviously, they can bite really hard, but their teeth are not as resistant as their jaws can bite hard. And so they can bite so hard that they split their teeth open. And obviously that is not something you want. And clearly that would be a time when you would put your trust in the vet to fix the problem. But you've got to be sensible about it. So you're not going to give a little dog like mine a huge, I don't know, shin bone or femur from a cow, which is a huge animal, and you don't want to give him bones that were load-bearing, because obviously a load-bearing bone of a large animal, it's going to have to be really strong and therefore really hard. So that's not suited to a small dog. It might be suited to a Great Dane. I don't know. I don't have any of those, but certainly not good for my dog. So he normally gets lamb's ribs, and those are work. He mostly eats them. He doesn't actually finish them, but he kind of knows at them a bit and cleans them all up and plays with them, and it's all a bit disgusting, but you know, he has a great time and they're good for him, and they also clean his teeth, and his teeth are pretty good. He's only three, but for his age they're pretty good. So he is just eating those, and then he eats a lot of actual meat. So I get him mince. I get him fat mince, which is a bit cheaper, and also fat has got a lot of vitamins, so that's good. And it's also not a prime meat product. So normally he gets some mince from beef, so beef mince. But the thing he loves the most, and the cats adore that thing too, is lamb's hearts. So again, lamb's hearts are almost a byproduct. I'm sure there are some people who eat them, but not a huge amount. So I get the butcher to cut them into small pieces because I don't want to give him a whole heart at the time. And he adores them. The cats love them. And so that is really a good meaty option for him. Now, when I say he also has to have 10% offal in his diet, those hearts, even though they're technically in our language, they're offal, don't count towards his offal portion. And that's because the offal I'm talking about here is secreting organs. So kidneys and liver and things like that. So a heart is a muscle. So it's basically the same composition as a thigh bone. So that counts as meat. And then I give him offals, which he does not like very much, but I try to mix it with other stuff and he usually eats a bit. So for offal, I've tried giving him kidneys and he totally didn't want them. He likes liver, but I don't always find them. What I have found at one of the butchers I've visited is what he calls a mix of offals. So basically it's a mince made up of a whole heap of organs. And I've looked at the list of organs that are in there, and there's also a lot of heart. So it is not all secreting organs. So I kind of think of that as a 50% off or 50% meat kind of mix. And so I just add some of that to Kip's meal, and most of the time he reluctantly eats them. So that's really it. You know, really what specifically you feed your dog will depend on what's available around you, what's easy for you to find, how much money you're prepared to spend. But the point is that if you do it a bit of research and you look around a little bit for it, it does not have to break the bank. In fact, for us, it's turned out to be possibly cheaper than feeding him biscuits. In my travels, I have found a really good butcher in our area that actually delivers to me, so that's brilliant. But he's quite far away, and I have to place fairly large orders in order for him to deliver. So freezer space does become an issue. So that's something you might want to consider before you make a meat bulk order. Now, I really like this business, so I'm happy to support it. The downside of it is that I get a whole heap of meat, about 2 months' worth, 2 months' worth of meat for keep and a little bit for the cats as well. And then I have to sit there and put it into bags. And that was also an issue because originally I was using Ziploc bags, but then I realized I was using all this plastic. So now I'm trying to keep all the Ziploc bags that I use for other things, wash them and hold on to them so that then I can put the dog's meat in them and freeze it that way. And then once they've had the dog's raw meat in it, though, I don't bother rewashing them again because I think they're just a bit past their prime, and they do go into the soft plastic recycling that we have in our area, so they can get recycled, but I still didn't want to be using brand new plastic bags every time. So I've changed that a bit, but it is a hassle because you have to spend, I spend about an hour every 6 to 8 weeks moving all this meat and cutting it up. A lot of it comes already cut, but just kind of moving it from the bags that comes in into the bags that I freeze it in. The reason why I go through this very disgusting process is because it will come in single type bags. So all the chicken necks will be in one bag, all the mince will be in one bag, all the lamb's hearts will be in another bag. Whereas I want to make bags that are a mix of everything so I can just get them out of the freezer, and that is 1 or 2 or 3 days worth of meals for Kip. I can keep the rest in the freezer. So recently I've gone to larger bags again to reduce the amount of bags I need, because I don't need to defrost the fresh one. You know, if I just put it in the fridge, it will last 2 or 3 days, and I can just give him a portion of it every day until we get to the end, and then I get another one out of the freezer. But certainly the freezer space has been an issue, especially because this year we have a really happy garden that is producing a lot, and we're trying to freeze a lot of the produce. Luckily, at the same time, my youngest daughter has started going to preschool, and her preschool is next to another butcher. So I think for this year, while she's at preschool, I'm actually going to do things a little bit differently and go to this particular butcher who also has a lot of the off cuts that I want, and just go there every couple of weeks and just bring a couple of weeks worth of meat at home. And that way I've only got a smaller amount of meat in the fridge. It doesn't take me as long to make my bags. In fact, I've gone to containers and I buy probably about 10 days to 2 weeks worth of meat. And I have two containers that I distribute the meat into. One goes in the freezer and one goes in the fridge. And I'll feed it to Kip and the cats for about 4 days. And that leaves me with about maybe 3 days of break. And then I start the next container. And that actually brings me to my next point, which is convenience. Certainly after hearing all of this routine, you're probably thinking, oh God, the biscuits are so much easier. And I totally agree. That is the one thing the biscuits have going for them, and probably the reason why they were invented, is that they are just so convenient for the humans. So after pretty much feeding him 100% raw for the first 2 years of his life, I have now reached a compromise, and he doesn't seem to mind, and it saves my sanity and a bit of freezer space. So I think it's suitable. I'm glad that I was able to keep up 100% raw feeding while he was really in his growing phase. But now I've come to a bit of a compromise. So like I said, I buy about 10 days worth of meat and I stretch that food for 2 weeks by doing about 4 days of raw and then about 3 days or 2 or 3 days, depending on where we're going, of biscuits. So I have selected a type of biscuit that is low in fillers and high in meat, because a lot of the biscuits will have a lot of grain or a lot of pulses to try and make up the bulk of it, and then the meat is really only one of the many ingredients. So I have landed on this brand that I think is slightly better than the others. I mean, they're all pretty bad as each other, but I think this one is a little better. And I alternate this brand with another brand, which I think is even much better, because it's not actually biscuits. It is a freeze-dried raw meat. So that is just about the next best thing to feeding raw. The downside of that particular one is that it's extremely expensive. So basically, he's getting about 60% raw meat and maybe about 10 to 20%, depending on the times and whatever I've got on hand, of either something from our kitchen. You know, if we're having sausages, he'll just have a sausage. If we're having fish, he might just have a piece of fish. So he gets stuff from the kitchen as well. And also that 20% is made up of, yeah, food from our kitchen and the expensive freeze-dried raw food, which is very convenient and very good for him, but extremely expensive. And then the remainder of his diet, which is about 20 to 30%, depending on the week, is made up of a brand that I think is slightly better than the rest of just commercial biscuits. To be honest, he loves his biscuits, so I don't feel so bad. I figured it's a bit like taking a kid out for an ice cream or for a hamburger. It's not a healthy diet, but, you know, once in a while, it's okay. I mean, I realize he's getting it every week, so that's a bit more than I would want to feed hamburgers to my kids. But, yeah, he seems happy, and that works well for us, so it's a bit of a compromise. By the same token, as I was doing all of this, I felt compelled to put the cats on a raw diet as well. And but we have five cats, and that just becomes very hard. But what I have done, I have switched the cats to wet food as opposed to biscuits. And that has made a huge difference to their health. They were all extremely overweight. Now we've only got one that is still overweight. And also, the boys, we have, well, we have three boys, but one is 17, so he's got a whole heap of other issues of his own. But of our four younger cats who are middle-aged, they're about 7 or 8 years old, the two boys were often getting urinary tract infections. And since we've switched them off the biscuits onto wet food, they haven't had any. They're doing much better on that. So again, in my travels and in my research, I read that, you know, if you can't afford or if it's too hard to give raw meat, switching your animals to a wet diet as opposed to biscuits is already a huge improvement because you are providing that moisture they need. And also often there is a much higher content of actual meat in those products than there is in biscuits, which are often about 50% at least of fillers, such as grains and pulses, which carnivores really don't need. So there, that has worked for us. And the cats also get meat, but they get it probably more like once a week. I do buy extra when I buy for Kip, and then the cats get extra chicken necks or a chicken carcass every now and again. Of course, the other downside of feeding raw is kind of the logistics of where to feed them. If you have a backyard that is secure and your dog can go in your backyard and hang out there, which I think most people do have, then that is totally fine. Obviously, you give them bones outside and it's all fantastic. Unfortunately, that is not the situation we're in. We don't have a secure backyard, but most importantly, we have a lot of snakes. So Kip is never outside on his own. He's always coming outside multiple times a day because we go multiple times a day and he comes out with us, but I don't want him to sit outside on his own. First of all, because he'll run off into the paddocks chasing rabbits and kangaroos, and that is bad because he can spook the kangaroos that can then get injured on fences and so on, or he can get injured himself by the kangaroos or by other things. But most importantly, I'm concerned that he'll just find himself a snake, which is a very likely occurrence around here. So for that reason, I give him the bones on a mat in our sunroom, which is our entrance. Does he stick to the mat? Not really. For a while, I was feeding him in a crate and giving it to him there, but it wasn't really working. It was working in terms of containing the mess, but it wasn't really working in terms of him eating, because he would just go And he likes to sort of bury them in a towel first and then eat them. So he would end up spending a lot of time in the crate just waiting for these bones to be the right ripeness for him to eat them. And then if I took him out and then he wanted to go back in, and it was just a hassle. So now I just give him bones on this mat. And things like chicken things kind of disappear really quickly. It's more the lamb ribs that tend to hang around. So this area where he gets fed is a sunroom, so it's not properly the house, but it is also the area where we come into the house. So it's not ideal. The first thing you see when you come in the house often is a few bones on the floor. So it's not ideal at all, but it's not such a tragedy. You know, most bones he eats pretty quickly, and we normally feed him at night. So by morning he has dealt with them, even though he doesn't sleep in the sunroom, he sleeps on our bed, but that's another story. So yeah, we found a compromise. Certainly just giving him biscuits is a lot quicker and easier, but I'm trying to find a compromise between my comfort and his health. So I think we've struck a balance that works for us. That's it. I hope that has inspired you to at least investigate the matter. Like I said, really don't just take my word for it. This is just something to spark your interest and explain why I've made these choices. And hopefully you can go ahead and do some research of your own and maybe decide to include more raw food in your dog's diet. Oh, one more thing, very important, especially bones, they have to be raw. Do not give cooked bones to your dog. That can be dangerous. It's totally unnatural for them, so they're not designed to eat cooked bones, and cooked bones can splinter. So that, I guess, is the first rule, which I'm telling you last, of raw feeding. Do not feed cooked bones of any type. You can feed cooked meat if you want to, but not cooked bones. There you go. Go and do some research and let me know what you think. I'll be posting on Instagram as usual at Tatum Hills, T-A-T-U-M Hills Farm, and on Facebook. So come and comment over there. Let us know if you're feeding your dogs raw or biscuits and why, and we can all learn from each other. And that's it for another episode of the Homesteading Rollercoaster. If you enjoyed the content, we'd love it if you subscribed. We'd also really appreciate a rating and review on your podcast platform, or send us a message. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Tatum Hills Farm. That's T-A-T-U-M Hills Farm, or on our website at www.tatumhillsfarm.com.au. Thank you for listening. Bye.